Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Hello, folks, and welcome back to the program. If it's scary stories you're looking for, true scary stories, well, you've found the right place. And tonight I have quite a collection for you from a state known for its paranormal activity. It's the 21st most populated state, with 6 million residents, the 30th state admitted to the Union back on May 29, 1848, bordered by Lake Superior and Lake Michigan, and home to glacial lakes, hardwood forests, farmland, swampland, bogs, caverns, and dunes. Some know it as the Badger State, America's Dairyland, the Dairy State, and of course, the Cheese State. But you can call it Wisconsin. And tonight we're going to explore the state and its connection to the paranormal, beginning where we left off on the last episode, in a cornfield. Please welcome Anonymous to the program.
Hey, Derek. I'm going to stay anonymous for this, but this story takes place in Plainfield, Wisconsin, back in the summer of 2020. Now, Plainfield, that name might be familiar from the infamous Ed Gein. So this story takes place before Ed Gein became popular on Netflix, so no one really knew what Plainfield, Wisconsin was, but I did because I had a seasonal job out there working on a crop dusting operation. I would pretty much mix pesticides in a vat, load them into an airplane. The population in Plainfield was about 900. So this was the smallest middle of nowhere town I had ever been to. I myself am not from Wisconsin, so this was very new to me. So we would work long hours, and I usually got off at night when it was too dark for the planes to fly. I would often have like other busy work to finish after all three airplanes were taken care of. One night in late July, it was around 10 p.m., and I had to fill up a jerry can with kerosene. The fuel was inside a shed that was on the property's edge, and behind it was a huge cornfield. So as I walked to the shed, I had my flashlight in one hand and the jerry can in the other. And I saw what looked like someone standing on the edge of the cornfield. And I assumed it must have been a farmer or maybe one of my coworkers. So I shined my light on them, and what I saw was an 8-foot gray shadow figure. It looked like it was made of smoke. I said something like, "Hey, what's up?" Keep in mind, this is like the last thing I have to do before my 12-hour shift is over. And at this point, I just want to go to bed, so I really didn't give a fuck. After I called out to it, it turned around and just looked at me for a second, then turned back to the corn. Now, when I think back on it, I think it was squatting and then stood up when I shined my light on it. But to be honest, it kind of felt like a fever dream. It's strange because I wasn't scared at the moment of this encounter. And I continued to just walk up to the shed and refill the jerry can. It wasn't until I lied down in bed that night that the reality of what happened really struck me. I looked up Wisconsin corn spirit on Google just because that was the only words that I could use to describe it. And I did find something on Wikipedia, and it was what I think a Fieldgeister. So the wiki info states that a Fieldgeister is a corn demon of German folklore. They are said to appear when the corn is at its highest, which it was at the time of my encounter, and are supposed to protect the crop for whatever reason. I also want to state that Wisconsin does have a large Polish and German population, so that kind of replicates the same, you know, conditions for them, I guess. I'm not sure. This is just my hypothesis. I really don't know what I saw. All I know is I saw some large 8-foot gray shadow creature in this cornfield. I think about it all the time. This was about 6 years ago. I still don't know what it was, but I definitely saw it. So, yeah, huge fan of your show. Thank you for everything you do.
Ooh, spookiness in the corn. We appreciate the submission, caller. And it's not too often that we get an Ed Gein reference here on the program. And for those that don't know, Gein was a disturbed individual that lived in Plainfield, Wisconsin back in the 1950s. He had a strange hobby. He dug up the recently deceased and made things from the harvested body parts. But the trouble, though, really started when he ran out of fresh corpses and started killing to feed his hobby. The Butcher of Plainfield. Gruesome stuff. But it has nothing to do with this strange encounter, other than the location. And as for that encounter, it's hard not to wonder if the pesticides that were being mixed might have produced some hallucinations. Hallucinations that took the form of a figure in the corn. Could that have been the cause of her caller's strange sighting? Or was this indeed a Fieldgeister, as our caller suggested? Now, I can't say for certain, but if last week's Best of Corn episode told us anything, it's that out there in the corn rows, anything is possible. Thanks again, caller, for ringing in. Well, gang, let's slip in one more story before we hit up our first ad break. So, Brian, welcome to the program.
Brian from Stevens Point. This takes place back in 2007, Vesper, Wisconsin. When I was living with my parents at the time, I was 19 years old, and we were having a fire, and my mom and I and my stepdad were just hanging out, just talking, listening to some music. My stepdad decided to go inside to go to bed because he had to work the next morning. My mom and I decided to stay and keep on watching the fire and just listening to some music and just, you know, hanging out. Then I had to use the bathroom. So living out of the countryside, I just went behind the garage, which looks like a barn. So I went out there, went behind the barn, and I started doing my business. Then when I looked out, we have an open field, which is 90 acres of land, and we have a very small portion of woods. And when I looked out in the field, I saw a weird, white, distinctive, white-looking deer. I know it wasn't an albino deer because it was transparent. It was very large, and I want to say it stood at least about 7 feet tall, standing on all four legs. It had antlers. So I stood in fear, and I literally ran back. My mom looked at me weird, said, "What's going on?" And I told her, I can't be outside right now. I'm too freaked out about this. And I went inside, and I watched TV for a little while, and I went to bed. I stayed in bed awake for half of the night. When my mom decided to come in, she knew I was awake. She came by me and knocked on the door to see if it was all right. She said you looked white as a ghost. So I explained to her what I saw. She said, I guarantee you just probably saw an albino deer. I told her it was all transparent. She's like, I think it's just a trick of the light because it was so dark. Then later on that night, I've heard there were a pack of wolves, I believe, that were trampling around the field at the time. So the reason why I knew about this, because my mom heard wolves howling and then she went inside. So thanks and have a wonderful night.
Thanks, Brian. A 7 foot tall, antlered entity. Now, Wisconsin is the state from which our infamous Moose Lady took place, in Eau Claire specifically. Visit Season 16, Episode 14 to hear that story. One of our very best over the past 10 years. But to hear the wolves howling as well, that's odd timing for sure. And perhaps that suggests that it's Wisconsin's famous Beast of Bray Road out on patrol. What's awesome stuff, Brian. We thank you again for sharing. All right, folks, I'm overdue for this first ad break. But when I return, more encounters from the Badger State. I'll be right back.
I encourage you to pray, to seek God, and to pursue God's best. Jesus. When the disciples heard him say this, they followed.
That's not fun for us to watch.
Now, jumping right back into the action, we hear from Pete. Let's hear your experience, Pete.
Hey, Derek, how's it going? My name's Pete, and this happened when I was doing my undergrad at UW in Madison, Wisconsin. So the year is 2016. I was a sophomore living off campus in a two-bedroom apartment with three other guys. So it was two guys per bedroom. It was winter in Madison. And if you're not familiar with Madison, there's a lot of nature around the campus. There's two big lakes that freeze over. And, you know, students and locals will go out and, you know, ice fish or have parties out there or whatever. It's a pretty cool feature of the campus, no pun intended. So I was settling down for the night, and my roommate, who I shared a bedroom with, tended to go to bed a lot earlier than I did. So he was asleep for probably an hour or two before I got into bed myself. But eventually I get into bed and I start drifting off to sleep. But before I can fall asleep, my roommate, who had been still as a rock for the past 2 hours under the covers of his bed, he kind of makes like a gasping noise out of nowhere and sort of sits upright in bed. And, you know, I think he assumed that I was asleep because I was laying in my bed and all the lights were off. So he didn't say anything to me at the time. And I just assumed that he had a bad dream and woke up or something. But the weirdest part was that he was shivering. And when I say shivering, I mean like I could hear his teeth chattering together, like a whole body shiver. And it was winter outside, and winter in Wisconsin is absolutely freezing, of course, but it was perfectly warm inside of our bedroom. And he was like under a thick blanket too, so it couldn't have been like a draft or something. But anyways, after he bolts upright in bed and starts shivering, he goes to the bathroom in our apartment for a few minutes and comes back into the room and goes to bed again. And he wasn't shivering anymore, so I assumed that everything was good and I went to sleep myself and kind of put the whole weird incident out of my mind. The next day, I get back from classes and my roommate is there and he asks me, like, did you hear me wake up last night? And I was like, yeah, you sounded like you were really cold. Was everything okay? And he was like, yeah, you know, I just woke up all of a sudden and was freezing cold. Then, and this is the part that still baffles me to this day, he told me that his mother called him that morning to check on him. And he said she sounded super distressed and was really relieved when he picked up the phone. So he asked her, like, what's going on? Why do you sound so worried? And she tells him that last night she had a horrible nightmare that my roommate, her son, was out walking on one of the frozen lakes in Madison and fell through the ice into the freezing water. He asked her what time she had the dream, and she said it was right around midnight. which is pretty much exactly when he shot out of bed and was violently shivering in our perfectly warm bedroom with no explanation. So, you know, he swears that he did not tell his mom about what happened until after she had called about her dream. And so that has always kind of mystified me. I don't really have an answer for it. I believe his family was from the Chicago area, so his mom was hundreds of miles away at the time. I don't know if it was some sort of weird premonition kind of thing or what, but none of us ever fell through the ice, thankfully. So I don't know. I'm curious to hear your take on it or if anybody else has experienced anything similar. Thanks, Derek. Take care.
Thank you, Pete. Now that's one that'll leave you with the chills. Pun intended. Wild stuff, Pete. Either a 1 in 1 million coincidence, or there was indeed some sort of connection made there between mother and son. Now, thankfully, the roommate was nowhere near the ice in reality. I think we're all happy that it was just a dream. But like I said, wild stuff. We thank you again, Pete, for sharing. Now, folks, if you have a story to share, why don't you call our hotline at 888-608-NIGHT. That's 888-608-NIGHT. Or you can record your message on your phone and email it to me at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. If you do, you just might find yourself on the show, just like this anonymous caller, ringing in from the obvious location.
Hi, Derek. I'm from Chicago, but this story takes place in the town I grew up in northern Wisconsin. It's a place called Ashland. And this happened between 2005 and 2010. I don't remember exactly the year. So it was late spring, early summer. I remember it was after 9 because the local news out of Duluth came on at 9 p.m. And that was on the TV. And I was in my living room, which was a sunroom. So, you know, windows all around. And it's really far north up there, so the sun is just starting to go down at 9 in the summer. And I remember looking out a window and seeing a bright red-orange light, super bright, like as bright as a low-flying airplane, but definitely way higher. And it was the color of, like, Mars, that, like, red-orange color you see. And it flickered on, and it stayed there for about 10 seconds. Just static in the sky, and then it faded away. And I remember thinking, man, that was bizarre, but whatever. And then right when that one fades away, another one on the complete other side of the sky lights up. Same color, same everything. It's there for about 10 or 15 seconds, then that one fades away. And then when that one fades away, a third one on the complete other side of the sky flickers on. Stays there for about 10, 15 seconds, static, exactly the same as the other two. And then that one fades away. And when that one fades away, the other two light up in a isosceles triangle shape. And they all just stay there for about 10 or 15 seconds before they, all three of them, fade away. And then my brother comes sprinting downstairs going, "Did you all see that? Did you all see that?" And I think he ended up staying out all night with a camera and didn't see anything. But yeah, that's my story. If anyone has any similar stories from the area, I'd love to hear them. Love the show. You're doing great work out there. Keep it up. Thanks. Bye.
We appreciate the entry, caller. And how about it, folks? Do you have a similar story from that general area? Or from anywhere, really? If you do, you know how to reach us.
It was fine. And then my mom the other day, I was helping her with something.
Just by 70% to go, I should have listened to my friends.
All right. How about a couple of stories that focus on mysteriously moving objects? Please welcome Alex to the show.
My name's Alex. I'm in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I was living in this really old house with a couple roommates, and I worked second shift, so I was there by myself a lot while they would be, you know, working their first shift jobs. My bedroom was on the first floor, And as far as I know, everything was level in the house. It was in pretty good shape, even though it was really, really old and had a really creepy basement. But anyways, when I would get home, I had a nightstand next to my bed, and I would always set my chapstick and my keys, like a lighter or whatever else I had in my pockets. That day, I'd set them there before I would like get ready to go to sleep. And I was like sitting there on my bed, you know, my stuff was sitting there on the nightstand, and all of a sudden my chapstick started to roll from the middle of the nightstand kind of out towards the end real slowly to the edge. I just watched it, and then it slowly rolled back to the middle, and then it slowly rolled again to the edge, and then fell on the floor. I didn't see anything or hear anything or feel anything, but it was really freaky, I guess, because I was by myself. And then another time I was sleeping, or trying to fall asleep, I should say. I was on my back and I had my blanket over the top of me and had the blanket pulled up like kind of just barely over my eyes. And I was laying there and the blanket would end up underneath my chin and I wouldn't feel it move. And, you know, maybe be like 30 seconds to a minute would go by and I'd pull it back up and somehow it kept ending up back down under my chin. It happened like 3 times over a couple minutes and it just freaked me out too. But yeah, I'd never really seen anything or had any experiences other than that. You know, for what it's worth, I figured I'd, you know, throw it out there. Thanks for your time and really enjoy the podcast. Have a good one.
Thanks, Alex. You know, having an object roll one way is one thing, but to have it move back then out again, well, that's certainly unusual. And to better drive the point home that this sort of activity is at best super unsettling, please welcome Chris to tonight's program.
Hi, Derek. This is Chris, and I'm from Madison, Wisconsin. But my paranormal event happened back in 1985 in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And I was 18 years old. I had just moved to Eau Claire to go to school, and I moved into a house that was said to have been haunted. So when I first heard that the house was haunted, I was interested in living there because I was interested in the paranormal, and I was excited to see what would happen. And I had heard from the girls who had lived there before me that they'd have issues like they'd come home from classes and the doors would be locked up in their bedrooms, and when they get into their rooms, the furniture would be moved around, things like that. And the house just had an eerie feeling, the girls said. Well, I had a roommate. Her name was Joanne. And Joanne and I knew that the house was supposedly haunted when we moved in there, but we weren't going to tell any of our new roommates at all. So the layout of the house is you walk in and there is the staircase goes right upstairs. And there's 2 bedrooms upstairs. And then when you walk in the front door, if you go to the right, there was a living room there. You had to get through that living room to get to the kitchen. And there was a living room to the left. And you had to go through that living room to get into the bedroom and the bathroom that was on the main floor. And that's where Joanne and I lived. So just to tell you, the house was kind of eerie anyway. And I never went in the basement. It just felt weird. But that bedroom that we lived on in the main floor and that second living room on the left-hand side, that felt okay. It just didn't have a crazy bad energy or anything like that. So this happened the very first night I was there, and I lived in that house for 9 months. The very first night I was there, Joanne and I were staying overnight. None of the other roommates were there yet, but Joanne and I were watching TV in that second living room, the living room that felt okay. And as we're watching TV, right behind our TV was a big, huge picture in a frame. And the picture had already been in that place when we moved in. So Joanne went to bed and I stayed up, and it was about midnight. I was still watching TV. So I decided to go to bed. I turned off the TV. I went into our bedroom, into the bathroom, and started getting ready for bed. And I heard a huge crash. And it was so loud, it woke Joanne up. She goes, "What was that?" So we go running out into the living room, and where he just had been, that big, huge picture was out of the frame. The picture itself was on the other side of the room. I don't know how it gotten there. And the frame was on the opposite end of the room. So somehow that picture and frame flew off the wall, and each part of it ended on either side of the rooms. Well, Joanne and I just stood there looking at it, and I was freaked out. A couple other strange things happened during the year, but I'd never heard anything from my roommates upstairs. They never said if anything had happened upstairs. The very last night we all were staying there, I had told my one roommate, I'll call her Anne. I said, Anne, you know, this house is supposedly haunted. And she just looked at me. She goes, I believe it. And I asked her, I said, well, did anything happen to you guys upstairs? She goes, I don't want to talk about it. So I don't know if something happened to those girls that lived upstairs. A couple weird things like that happened to us. I could always feel the creeps in that house. And let me tell you, I was glad when I moved. So thanks for listening. I love your show, Derek. So thanks for this awesome show, and stay spooky.
Thanks, Chris. More moving objects while the roommates are away in an older, creepy home in Wisconsin. I guess you should watch where you put your things down while visiting the Badger State. Interesting to say the least. We thank you again, Chris, for sharing the entry. Now, here with a jaw-dropping paranormal experience is Andy from Wisconsin.
Hi, Derek. My name is Andy. The story takes place in Juneau County, Wisconsin, in probably 2001-ish. My family and I had moved to an old farmhouse out in Juneau County. It was a house, a barn, and two outbuildings. The barn had blown over years prior. I'm not really sure when. It was unusable. We really couldn't even go into the main area of the barn, but there was an area in the back that was actually made of stone that led into the barn. I think that was probably the milk house that we could crawl into, my brother and I. So one time we did, we crawled in there. We were curious to see what we could find, and we found these really pretty old bottles, like the glass bottles that you'll see sometimes like in antique stores, the blue, the green. Well, we found blue ones, and I know my mom really liked that kind of stuff, so I grabbed one or two. I can't remember exactly. Took them in. My mom cleaned them up, and she put them in our windowsill in our kitchen. Shortly after that, I can't remember if it was that night or if it was the next night. You know, it was close in that time period. My brother and I were in our bedroom on the second floor of the house. The bedrooms were right next to each other, and the windows to our rooms were very close as well. And so we would lay in bed at night and talk to one another. So we were talking, you know, looking out the window, obviously, so our voices would carry over. And I saw something out by the barn. And so I was just kind of watching it. My brother goes, hey, did you see that? And I was like, I saw something. Yeah, like, what is it? I can't remember the exact conversation because, as I said, this is like 2001. But anyways, a few minutes go by. We're just still kind of talking back and forth and just looking out there. And all of a sudden, I see this boy, probably, I don't know, maybe 9-10 years old. And he's wearing, like, it looks like old denim, you know, that darker blue, maybe coveralls of some sort with, like, a jacket. He had blonde hair cut into one of those older, like, bowl-style cuts. But he looked off. I can't really explain it. I've never really been able to explain it. Like, he just kind of looked incomplete, if that makes any sense. And my brother kind of freaks out. He's like, oh my God, Andy, do you see that? And I said, yes, I do. And so I said to the boy, hello, do you need help? Or are you okay? Something to that effect. And he pointed at us, and then he pointed at the barn, and he had this sort of bereft look on his face, just sad. And I said, again, are you okay? Do you need help? And he pointed again towards the back of the barn, and he just stared at us for a few minutes. Well, it felt like a few minutes. It could have been a few seconds. And my brother came running into my room and, like, crawled in bed with me, and he's like, I don't like this. And, you know, I looked at him, and I was like, you know, it's okay. It's just a kid. And I looked back out, and he was still looking at us, and then he turned around, and he walked towards the direction of the rear of the barn. I don't want to say he just disappeared, because at night, at that time of year in Wisconsin, it does get very foggy. It could have been a human child, like a normal human child that just was lost, but it's all marsh back there behind the barn. It's all, you know, wet, marshy area. There's no houses back there. I don't know. It was incredibly creepy. We actually have several stories from that house, but I wanted to share that one. Thanks for listening and take care.
That'll keep you up at night. A potential ghost child. I thought the description of the clothing was oddly specific. I can picture exactly what Andy is describing here. That thick, dark blue denim. A fabric that was wildly popular during the turn of the century, all the way up into the 1940s. So maybe it was that detail that grounds this sighting in reality. Or maybe it was a real child. Perhaps the resident of the marsh behind the house. Though it doesn't sound like it. But it's an awesome experience in my opinion, Andy. And we can't thank you enough for sharing it here tonight. Now, if you would, join me in the woods of Wisconsin. Ron, take it away.
Hey, Derek, this is Ron from Wisconsin. This particular story took place, it would have been early June 2023. This took place at our family hunting property, which is about 12 miles north of the Wisconsin Dells. It's really close to Highway 13. Two of my cousins, myself, four friends of mine, and my now ex-brother-in-law, we all went up there for a four-day camping trip. And we had been enjoying ourselves sitting around the fire, and I had a Bluetooth speaker, and we were playing music all night. Around 11 o'clock, we started having these instances where the woods would just shut off for like 10 minutes. You know, you wouldn't hear any wildlife. All you hear is the wind and the fire cracking. And you would hear wood knocks in the background. Well, one cousin and myself, you know, we had heard the Sierra sounds before, and we had heard about the wood knocks and some of the other stuff that goes along with that. So he was like, oh boy, this is getting interesting. Well, anyhow, I think it was on the third or fourth time that the wood shut off. You know, we heard the wood knocks again, but about 200 or 300 yards away from the campground, we could hear there was two people having a conversation. At least that's what my thought was. And my cousin goes, hey, who's down there? And I says, I don't know. We're all here. And as far as I know, no one else was going to come up to join us. He was like, okay, well, something's going on down there. And I says, well, I am not going down there to find out who's there. Anyhow, later on in the night, I decided to throw on the Sierra sounds. And one of my buddy goes, hey, that wood knocking. He says, that's exactly what we heard all night tonight. I says, yeah. Well, and then, of course, the recording of the samurai chatter came on. And my cousin goes, holy crap, that's what we heard down there. And I says, yeah. And that's why I didn't want to go find out what it was, because I had a general idea and I didn't want to say anything. A couple of my buddies are like, you guys are nuts. There's nothing out there. And my one cousin and my buddy Al, he was like, yeah, I can't deny anything that just took place. I'm fairly certain something just took place there. I'm not going to discredit it. Anyhow, it's kind of an interesting story. Thanks again for the podcast. Hope to hear it on the show some point here. Take care.
Thanks, Ron. Could it be Bigfoot in Wisconsin? Now, could you imagine camping on the other side of that forest and hearing the Sierra sounds late at night over a loudspeaker? That gives me an idea. Maybe I'll push play on those recordings by Ron Moorhead and Al Berry next time I'm camping. I'm sure people will love the 2 a.m. wake-up call. Now, when it comes to Sasquatch in Wisconsin, according to the BFRO, Wisconsin ranks 18th in the U.S. for Bigfoot sightings, with 110 sightings on record. But as I alluded to earlier in the program, Wisconsin is known for more than just Bigfoot. The state is littered with cryptids,
In addition to the popular Beast of Bray Road and the infamous Hodag, you also have tales of creatures like the Mauston Birdman. Witnesses claim the beast has a bird-like head, a large beak, a human torso, arms and legs, thickly clawed toes, and big, round, yellow feathers. Then there's the La Crosse Batman, or the Briggs Road Batman. In 2006, a Native American man named Wahali and his son were driving down Briggs Road in La Crosse when a large winged creature flew toward them. They described it as being 6 feet tall, having sharp teeth, leathery, bat-like wings, spanning 10 to 12 feet, human legs with claws, and protruding ribs. It flew up to their windshield, screamed at them, then vanished over the treetops into the sky. Now, Wahali and his son both suddenly became ill and had to pull over to vomit. They reported feeling sick for a week after the incident. And down in Lake Winnebago, there's said to be a water monster. Officially the largest lake entirely within the state of Wisconsin, Lake Winnebago is supposedly home to a massive, serpent-like aquatic creature that, according to indigenous legend, is known for devouring deer, elk, and moose whole. Eyewitnesses have reported seeing lengthy shadows undulating beneath the surface, and giant waves rippling in its wake. Now, Wisconsin is also home to a number of other water cryptids, such as Pepe from Lake Pepin, Jenny from Lake Geneva, Old Lopjaw from Feller Lake, Bozo from Lake Manitoga, Long Neck from Long Lake, Rocky from Rock Lake, and similar creatures in Devil Lake, Lake Montana, and Lake Michigan. And there are plenty more where those came from, and plenty more stories coming up as well. So don't move a muscle. I'll be back in a moment.
Mystic, and it deserves the attention that you and your wife are giving to it.
Now our next weird Wisconsin story comes to us from Sean. Sean, the mic is all yours.
Hey, Derek, this is Sean from Wisconsin. In 2008, I bought a new house. And when we sold our old house and moved to the Madison area to live in our new house, we had a month where we closed on our old house in April and wouldn't be able to take possession of the new house until the end of May. So I had a month where I was living with my in-laws. When we did finally take possession of the new house, it was not in the best shape. I basically took possession of the house on a Tuesday night, and then I had Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to make it livable for my then 4-year-old daughter. I woke up very early on Thursday and drove the 90 minutes from my in-law's house to the new house. I stopped at a Home Depot on the way, and I got the new paint and all the supplies I needed. And then I proceeded to spend 3 days basically spending 14 to 18 hours a day doing home repair and renovation, and then driving back to my in-laws at night to sleep for 3 to 4 hours before getting up and doing it again. Now, the hours that I'm putting in, I am driving through the countryside in the middle of the night, you know, midnight-ish, and then getting up before dawn and driving back. So I'm highly stressed. I am exhausted. But on that Friday night, that last night before we move in the next day, I am leaving Madison at little after midnight. So I'm not going to get to the in-laws until about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I am driving through the countryside. Now, the first part of what makes this adventure creepy was that I had to pass St. Coletta's of Wisconsin. And St. Coletta's was a Catholic charity that used to take people with mental issues. St. Coletta's is where the Kennedys actually sent John F. Kennedy's sister to just get her out of the way so she wouldn't ruin John and Bobby's political careers. And they did horrible things to her. They gave her a lobotomy. It's terrible. But when you pass St. Coletta's, it looks like Hogwarts. It's terrifying at night. You drive past it and you go, oh yeah, that place is haunted. And If you've ever driven in the countryside in the Midwest, you know that you are always on high alert for deer. And it is dark. It is so dark. I remember there was no moon at this time, so it was extremely black out. And I come around this corner, and I see movement on the left side of the road. And of course, I lock up the brakes, and I squeal to a stop thinking it's deer. But instead, it's a human shape. It's 6 foot tall, 5 foot ten, something like that. It is a man. And I can clearly see that it's a man. And it had started to stride across the street, and it is black as the night itself, but it is lit up in my headlights, and it's almost glossy and oily, and it has no features. Like, there's nothing in the face, but I can tell, for some reason, like, I can see that it's wearing clothing. Like, that part of it, even though it is black and oily and weird shaped, I can tell that it's wearing clothing. I didn't see a hat, but it was a shadow person. It was as black a shadow as I've ever seen in my life. And the shadow thing stood in the road and stared at me, and I stared at it, and then it just turned and walked to the right side of the road and disappeared. And the ghost hunter part of my brain wanted to go after it. Like, I remember thinking, I need to know where that's going. And at the same time, in this weird kind of disconnect, terror took over my body. And no matter what my brain told my body to do, my body thought different. And my body basically stepped on the gas pedal and flew down the road. And I remember I got about 3-4 miles away. And then I started getting that weird, like, shuddering feeling in my chest, like I had just touched something wrong. You know, like, if you've ever spun out on black ice or something like that, if you've ever been in a car accident where you ended up not hurting your car and everything was okay, but you had spun out, and that trembling feeling that comes from that type of thing, that's what I felt. It hit my heart. It hit my chest. I was trembling. I was sweating. And I was panicked. And I don't know what to say. It was this weird kind of fear. Like, I wasn't exactly scared, you know, like, not terrified scared, but there was definitely some kind of visceral body reaction to whatever I had just seen. And then the next morning, the wife and I wake up at her parents' house, and we're going to go and start this move-in process. I got to go get a rental truck. And she and I are driving to the storage locker, and we're taking that same road that I had been on the night before. And I was telling her the story, and she was kind of rolling her eyes at me. I said, no. I said, I saw it, and this is what I saw, and I explained it to her. And as we were coming around a corner, and I said, oh, it was just, you know, near St. Coletta's, you're going to see the bend in the road, and I can show you. And sure enough, we came around. There's the bend in the road. There were fresh tracks where I had locked up my car, and I had actually skidded on the road. So you could actually see where my tires had locked it up and left some rubber on the road. And there in the daylight, for the first time, I could see that bend clearly in the pure daylight, 8 o'clock in the morning, where I had locked up with that shadow entity. He had been crossing from an empty field and moving to a cemetery. There was a graveyard attached to a church, and that's where it had been heading. And I saw that, and it kind of blew my mind. I still remember every second of this encounter. I remember it better than other important moments in my life. It's just kind of stuck into my brain. I've never had another shadow person encounter since or before. Man, you have one, and one is enough. Anyway, still enjoy the show. Been listening for, like, probably since, I think I found it in season 2 or 3, and I've been a patron for ever. So keep it up. We'll talk to you on another time.
Thanks, Sean. And thanks for supporting the show on Patreon. It means the world to us. Now, this seems to be a common theme there in Wisconsin. Tall, dark, shadowy entities outside in cornfields and yards and on the side of the road. And it's funny, Sean brought up St. Coletta's. In addition to everything Sean said about the place, it's also home to one of the spookiest dogman stories I've ever heard. Now, we don't have time to deep dive right now, but check out tonight's show notes or Google the Mark Shackleman Dogman Encounter. I bet you'll have fun reading it. And we'll explore that case deeper at another time. but there are a lot of coincidences going on up there. Either that, or there's just so much paranormal activity in Wisconsin that it can't help but overlap. Now, another big thanks to Sean for sharing the tale. We appreciate you making the call. Now, our next spooky story comes to us from a bar. Danny, welcome to tonight's broadcast.
Hi, Derek. This is Danny, and I am from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, but my story takes place in a small town that is not far from here. It's Chautauqua, Wisconsin. Very small town, and there's a bar there, and my good friend works at the bar, and so I went to go visit her at the bar one night while she was working, and apparently this bar is haunted. I will say that the name of the bar is Sassy's, and I didn't know that it was haunted at the time, to be honest, but I was there with her, and there was nobody else in the bar at this time. So it was literally only me and her there, the whole bar to ourselves, other than the fact that she was working. And then when we were chilling there, a couple did come in sitting at the far end of the bar, but I decided I had to go to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom, and I was not spooked out. I was not thinking anything paranormal at all. I was just doing my business. And then while I was using the bathroom, I heard the door to the bathroom open. And then I heard my friend say something to me, like along the lines of like, hi or hey. And then I heard the door close. And I responded back. I said, I will be out in just 1 second. Hang on. And so when I get done, I go back out. And I look at the bar and I see that my friend is on the complete other end of the building at the bar talking to the two customers that had came in. And I was like, that's weird, because it was literally like 30 seconds ago that I heard her come to the bathroom and say hi. And so I asked her when I came out, I said, hey, did you come by the bathroom? And she was like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, I have been down at the bar working. And that really freaked me out and freaked her out a lot, because it sounded like her. So I think this is kind of like a mimic type situation, but at the bar where she works. So this was like just a few months ago at the bar. And it was very unsettling to me, especially to the fact that like I wasn't paranoid. I wasn't thinking anything spooky. I believe her. She was dead serious that she did not go by the bathroom or anything along those lines. The people at the bar also said that, nope, nobody had gone in or out. Nobody went in the back. And so, yeah, it really spooked her out too. And then from there on, I learned from some people that other people have had haunted experiences there. But thank you so much for the podcast. I love it. Bye.
Thanks, Danny. Now, we put up a link in tonight's show notes to Sassy's Bar, so you can swing by and visit if you're in the area. And as far as haunted places in Wisconsin go, again, the state is full of them. There's the Darfield Cemetery, the Bloody Bride Bridge, Summerwind Mansion, Hill Farm, Witch Road, Boy Scout Lane, Rainbow Springs Resort, the Octagon House, and J Road, that is said to be patrolled by a phantom jogger. The point is, the state is primed for paranormal activity. If you'd like to read more on any of those legends, simply visit the links in tonight's show notes. Thanks again, Danny, for calling in.
I do want to tell you about this story before we take another call here.
We need to talk about the lights.
And I said, now, what does that code say?
All right. Speaking of having your name called, this next caller, too, shares a similar experience. From the state of Wisconsin, obviously. Please welcome Jason to tonight's program.
My name is Jason. This happened to me when I was a young man. The year was around 1985. Me and my best friend were sitting in our home north of Green Bay Area, Wisconsin. There was a walkout basement. We used to play in the side room that had a ping pong table in it. We'd play a game all the time up on top of the ping pong table called Crossbows and Catapults. And adjacent to the room was a wood room or mechanical room, and we had a stove there. And we burned wood, and there were two doors to the walkout basement, one sliding door in a living room that was downstairs and one door that was to the mechanical or wood stove room. And this was probably around 7:30, 8 o'clock at night on a weekend, and we were the only two in the basement. My parents were upstairs. Doors were locked. It was nighttime. We were around 12 years old, and we were playing, and we moved down to play on the floor with some He-Man or some Star Wars characters that we were playing with at the time. And very, very clear, a man's voice said, "Jason," which is my name, and it came right from the mechanical wood room. And my friend and I looked at each other as if, who said this? And my father and mother were upstairs, and my sister, who was about 2 years younger than me, she was upstairs in her room, and it was just Mark and I in the complete basement. That's where we were. My room was down there, and very freaky. So we got up enough courage to get up and go into the mechanical room, and this was a small room, 12 feet by, you know, 8 or 10 feet. That's it. There was a wood bin. There was a small bench where my father would sharpen chainsaw blades or work on things. And there was a door that walked out of the walkout ranch and went out to the back shed where the wood was. And there was a poured concrete path there. Now, nobody had opened this door. Nobody had unlocked the door. And nobody was in there. We completely looked in the whole room, and there was no one there. And I thought maybe somebody was upstairs hollering through a vent, but there were no heating vents anywhere even for this to come through. It was very audible, just as if somebody was within the room speaking or asking for me, a man's voice. Not an old voice, not a young voice, but just a man's voice, a middle-aged man's voice. It was not my father's voice, was not anybody's voice. My best friend to this day, every time we get together, we always talk about the night that somebody called my name and there was nobody there. Very strange. That's it. That's my story. I hope you can use it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. We sure can use it. A disembodied voice, but worse, a disembodied voice that says your name. Grade A creepy, and we thank you, Jason, for sharing it with us. Now, in addition to ghosts and monsters, Wisconsin is known for its UFOs as well. And according to the National UFO Reporting Center, it ranks 20th in the U.S. for UFO sightings. And the top 10 cities to report such activity goes as follows. Number 10 is Beloit. Janesville comes in at number 8, tied with Waukesha. Number 7 is Appleton. Number 6 is Oshkosh. Number 5 is Racine. Coming in at number 4 is Kenosha. Number 3 is Green Bay. Number 2 is Madison. And to no one's surprise, number 1 is Milwaukee. Now here with a Wisconsin UFO call of her own is Olivia. Please welcome her to the program.
Hey, Derek. My name is Olivia. The story takes place in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, which is my hometown. I was in high school at the time of the story. It was around the year of 2007, late November, early December-ish. I remember because there was snow on the ground and the family and I, we were getting ready to put Christmas lights up. It was about 5:30 in the morning and I came down into the kitchen of my parents' house to get ready for school. It was still dark outside at that time and most of the lights were off in the house besides a few Christmas lights. My parents have a big garden window with a little breakfast nook right beside it. So every morning I would sit and eat breakfast there before school. The garden window faced north and there were two tall walnut trees right in the backyard. But other than that, at that time, the backyard was nothing else but like a flat farm field. Because it was so dark outside, I could very clearly notice a bright orange light coming through the garden window and into the house. When I looked outside, I saw three large, round orange lights arranged in the shape of a triangle, so one at each point. The lights appeared to be either in the trees or in the sky just right behind them. I got up to get a closer look, but when I did, the lights started to spin in a circle, but while keeping a triangle shape. The lights then moved from behind the trees and flew directly north, again spinning, but still keeping its triangle shape. It continued to do this while getting higher up in the sky before completely disappearing. Again, this was around the year of 2007, before cell phones were a big thing, and way before Starlink ever existed. So not a lot of people believe me, or they just try to explain it away. I'd love to know if anyone else out there has seen something like this, or if maybe what I saw could be explained away. Well, thanks for listening to my story, and I am loving the podcast. Thank you.
Thanks, Olivia. That triangle shape, yet again. It's a constant in regards to UFO reports. Not just in Wisconsin, but across the U.S. Three lights forming a triangle. Most times, a craft can be seen between the points of light. Ominous, silent, low flying, and fast as hell. I can't wait until I have my first sighting. Now, a big thanks to Olivia for sharing this entry. And a big thanks to all of tonight's submitters. And a huge thanks to you, dear listener, for joining us here this evening. Now go tell a friend if you had a good time, and share your story if you've got one. Now Monsters Among Us is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Copyright Red Grow Media. Additional support is provided by Sarah Carter Hayes, Delaney Bowers, and Connor Ryan. All media used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. Be sure to follow us on our social media accounts. Join us on YouTube, Discord, and leave us a rate and review wherever you can do such a thing. Don't forget you can catch the show every Saturday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern on the Unex Digital Network. Just visit unexnetwork.com to tune in. Now tonight's score was provided by Iron Cthulhu Apocalypse, Co.AG Music, and Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Alright gang, I'll catch you back here on Thursday with a brand new collection of chill-inducing entries. Hopefully I'll see you there. But until then, you keep it spooky, and have a good night.